Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Fay.
And we're just delighted and honored that you are with us tonight and that Blog Talk is working and we're on the air at 9 o'clock when we're supposed to be.
And it's Mercury retrograde.
Oh, hush. Don't even go there. I am so excited that we are here and all is well. So, yay. Our topic tonight is Your Word is Your Wand, and we have a lot of great things to say about that topic tonight, of course. But before we get into that, Samantha has a crystal of the week, and I have a four-legged person of the week. So you want to tell us about your crystal, Samantha?
Sure. I'm going to share a crystal that I just bought for myself. It's called Epidote. It is spelled E-P-I-D-O-T-E. And there's a really good chance I'm mispronouncing it.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I've heard Jill talk about it.
Okay. I'm going to be reading from a website that's healingcrystalsforyou.com, and she says that Epidote brings more abundance, prosperity, and improved relationships. Epidote is a stone that is known to affect different people in different ways. It is also known as pistacite and may have a very beneficial effect on you or not. In studying this crystal, Deb, it sounded a little bit like malachite, you know, where some people really resonate with it and others do not.
Right, and then it breaks if it's time to quit.
Right, but Epidote does not do that.
Oh, okay.
How you are affected by its energy may to some degree depend on your predominant way of thinking, as its vibration is known to bring you more of the same. This aspect is said to benefit you, as the influx of traits brings them clearly to your awareness. It is said to be very helpful to aid prosperity because as long as you are generous, you will manifest more generosity and more prosperity. This may aid you to experience a variety of good things in your life in a diversity of different ways, including improved relationships. The stone is found in several different locations from Mozambique to South Africa, Norway, Austria, France, Mexico, and right here in the United States.
Mm.
It's a green color. It's if you picture unikite, the green of unikite,
mm-hmm,
that's the kind of mossy green. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the green that Epidote is.
Uh-huh.
The name Epidote comes from the Greek word for increase.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice. It is. So why would you use it? It is a stone used for spiritual growth, and it helps you to attune to spirit and to your higher self. This stone will enhance your awareness of various aspects of yourself, and it may be very helpful if you unknowingly have been resistant to letting go of some attitude that you need to change for your highest good. Epidote has within it an energy that aids you to have the courage to let go of things that are holding you back from living the life of your dreams. As you begin to embrace the boldness of spirit that Epidote brings to you, this will help you to have a greater knowledge of who you really are and your spiritual purpose. This stone is a catalyst for change, and once you have clarified your ideals, it will aid you to manifest your dreams into reality. This stone helps you to learn that if you raise your vibration, you can be enabled to completely change your reality via the action of your thoughts and actions. If you are a very negative person, you may choose to avoid using this stone, as it is known to accentuate negative traits. The only bad thing about that, Deb, I don't think a lot of negative people actually know they're negative.
That's generally true, dear.
Yeah. This vibration works for your highest good, but it is not comfortable. It works within all chakras and helps the process of raising your vibration more physically, emotionally, and spiritually. It helps you to let go of negativity. It will assist you if negative traits become more obvious, as you may feel that it's necessary to work through those things in your life. On the other hand, if you are a positive thinker, the vibration of the stone will emphasize your positive traits and bring you more of the same. Most people have a mixture of positive and negative within them, and so some traits may be easier to recognize in others rather than in yourself. By Epidote accentuating these traits, they become so hard to live with that you are stimulated to change by necessity. It is beneficial for you to be able to replace any negative thoughts that come up after working with this stone in a more positive way of thinking and living with your life.
Lovely.
Isn't that interesting?
How expensive is it?
Oh, let's see. I bought a pendant. It was $25.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah.
So not much.
Not much. And I'm just I have this one issue in my life where I'm kind of standing on the edge of the diving board and everyone is in the water going, jump. Come on. You can do it. Jump.
Have you read our Facebook page lately?
Yes, I know.
You know, jump. Okay.
And so I just am like looking for a stone to kind of help me jump off that diving board, and this one kept coming to me in really weird and neat ways, so I bought it.
Oh, cool. Okay, wonderful. Lovely. Thank you. Our four-legged person of the night is somebody that folks have kind of negative reactions to, and I want to dispel some of that tonight. It's porcupine. And David Carson's and Jamie Sam's, in their medicine card book, say that porcupine represents innocence, that they are really about faith and trust, and that faith contains within it the ability to move mountains. The power of trust in life involves trusting the Great Spirit has a divine plan for you. Your task is to find the pathway that is most beneficial for you and that uses your greatest talents to further that plan, which we're going to be talking about later when we talk about our topic tonight. So porcupine gives us a reminder not to get caught up in the chaos of the adult world where fear, greed, and suffering are commonplace. It is about a relief from seriousness and severity. Open your heart to those things that give you joy. Remember the preciousness of fantasy and imagination, and know that you can be playful and childlike, and it can be a wonderful tool. Those things can be a wonderful tool to you manifesting what you would like to have happen in your life. And I just have to tell a story about porcupine. My Lakota friends do a lot of work with porcupine quills in their artwork and in their jewelry making. And the way they get the quills from the porcupine, they don't go out and kill porcupines for their quills. That's a terrible thing to do. They don't do that. They go out into the woods, and they find the porcupine, and they throw a blanket over him. And, of course, when the blanket comes down, the porcupine shoots out its quills. And they take the blanket off. The porcupine runs away, and then they pick the quills from the blanket.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
There's the cutest video ever going around Facebook of a porcupine eating a carrot for the first time.
Oh, I've seen that one, and I've seen the one where the porcupine is eating a baby pumpkin, too.
Yes, yes, yeah. And then he's laughing and laughing. I love it.
Exactly. And so that's a big part of what our topic about tonight is our words and how much power they have and how joy brings such good things into our lives.
Very
so you
nice.
Want to get started?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great.
So all summer my mantra has been, your word is your wand. I've been saying it to everybody, to my kids, to my friends, to the point where a couple of friends have been like, that's really clever, Samantha. You should copyright that. Well, I did not make it up.
Okay, and let's write the woman whose name, who did's name in the...
Your Word is Your Wand is a book by Florence Scovel Shin. And we have mentioned her several times on the show. She is the person who inspired Louise Hay. She wrote this book, Your Word is Your Wand, in 1928. So this is old New Age stuff. And I just love the idea that we can create anything with our words. We've said so many times before on the show, you know, the power of our words. And I wanted to take this hour to focus on the power of, you know, our words and also our thoughts and our intentions behind our words. And to know that our words, whether they be positive or negative, have such a powerful impact on ourselves, our world, and those around us.
We are sending out energy with those thoughts and those words.
Constantly.
Yes.
There's a really powerful cartoon of a father yelling at his child, and out of his mouth is coming a punching bag, a punching fist, and it's hitting the kid over and over and over. And it's, you know, just to remind you of the power of your words, you know, like I said, for good or for bad. Our words create. That's what that expression means. Your word is your wand. They can create magic in our life, but they can also create disaster in our life. And so it's really important to remember to be vigilant of our words. Jesus says, by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Death and life are in power of the tongue. So this is not old news. This is not new news. This is old news about the power of our words. And I think it's really important to look at, I always try when I'm talking to people, when I'm talking to myself, I try to kind of step away from myself and listen to what I say. It's really hard to do because sometimes you get caught up in the emotion of things. But I think it's important to kind of step outside of yourself and listen to what you're saying. You know, Deb, I was talking about how I've had, you know, all those health issues these last 2.5 years with the cancer and everything, and I realized that for a couple of years preceding that, I would use the expression, oh, that just makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, duh. Right, don't do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I, get off my back, you're a pain in the ass. I can't stomach that. You give me such a headache. Those things manifest. And
yeah.
We think of Louise Hay as being the one who created that, and certainly she has given us a lot of great detail about that, but a lot of that comes from Florence Scovel-Shinn, does it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. In fact, in the back of this book, Your Word is Your Wand, she has a whole section on physical ailments, and I thought, oh, that's where she got the whole healing your body thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She has a thing on heart disease and what false growth, rheumatism, ears, anemia, all sorts of things. Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely.
And what this book entails are specific affirmations that you can use to heal your words and to really bring into action, you know, that which you need to create the reality that you want to create. I think it's so important to think about, you know, what you are creating around yourself with your words, with your thoughts. I got a fortune. We ordered Chinese food a couple of weeks ago, and the fortune in my fortune cookie said, thought is the ancestor of action.
Oh, very nice.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And it's so true. Thought is the ancestor of action. We think something, and it takes a long time for it to materialize. Now,
sometimes.
Good and bad.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Sometimes it's instant karma.
Like how?
Well, sometimes we'll think something, and it'll happen immediately. Sometimes it's very quick, not always very slow.
Sure, but can you give an example of how that would, like, how that would work? Because I've never had an instant, personally.
Oh.
Like, can you give an example of when you've said something and it instantly happened?
Yeah, I'm sure I can. Of course, right now, as you ask me that question, I can't, but I'm sure I can. I'll come back to it.
Okay. Because I feel like, you know, you think something, and eventually it comes to pass. And the difficult thing about that is that time, you know, because sometimes we're working on a goal, and it takes a lot longer than we think it's going to take, and so we give up, and then we change our word, we change our thought, and then we change that perspective reality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to hold that thought, whether it, if it's positive. I think it's really important to not to hide from the negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've known a lot of fearful people in my life, and what they do is they hide their fears from themselves. So they won't say it out loud. You know, there are certain things they can't even bring themselves to say out loud. And I think that when we hide our negative thoughts and fears from ourselves, we actually empower them in some weird way. So I think it's okay to have negative thoughts. It's okay to have fearful thoughts, but let them be and then let them just die away. I think that's important.
Well, yes. And I think that we manifest our thoughts and we manifest our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
If we believe something is going to be negative, it is. You know,
right.
my father did not have the world's best grammar. But he had this phrase that whenever I was arguing a point, and trying to get him to see something from my perspective, no matter what it was, he was always a naysayer. And one of the sentences I can still hear in his voice is, yeah, honey, but there just one thing is. And he always had that, most often, not always, but most often had this kind of negative doom and gloom, oh, there's always going to be a bad part of whatever the situation was. That was always his belief. And I think often in his life he manifested that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, you know, I think we've all been there, done that. I mean, that's not, you know, there's no judgment there.
No, not at all. I think we all have done it. Certainly we have. Yeah, he just did
and
it consistently.
And I think in every, what?
He just did it consistently.
Right. I think it's really important to always, I guess my passion with this topic on this hour is to know that your words have power and to stop giving power to everybody else. You know, to stop blaming and stop pointing fingers and stop saying, you know, if only this had happened, if only this hadn't happened, and to just look deep within. I want to read, if you don't mind, a quick paragraph from Florence Scovel Shinn's book, Your Word is Your Wand. She says, if a man is in debt or people owe him money, it shows that a belief of debt is in his subconscious mind. This belief must be neutralized in order to change conditions. For example, a woman came to me saying a man owed her $1,000 for years, which she could not compel him to pay. I said, you must work on yourself, not the man, and gave her this statement. I deny debt. There is no debt in the divine mind. No man owes me anything. All is squared. I send that man love and forgiveness. In a few weeks, she received a letter from him saying he intended on sending the money, and in a month came the $1,000. If the student owes money, change the statement. There is no debt in divine mind. Therefore, I owe no man nothing. All is squared. All my obligations are now wiped out under grace in a perfect way.
Mm.
Isn't that such a lovely idea of mm-hmm. instead of holding on to that, oh, he owes me money, darn him, or, you know, and just sending him love and forgiveness.
Yeah, and look what happens. There's restitution made.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and even little things. I think here's a place where I think about this sometimes. If I'm going to the grocery store and I'm standing in the grocery line and there is an older woman who is clearly very tired, and just you can just feel coming off of her that she has been on her feet for 8 hours and she's tired and this is the best she can do. You can just feel it sometimes. And it's so important for me to remember to be kind to her, you know, not to be snappy or like, oh, hurry up because she couldn't find a price tag or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's little people that you meet during the course of, I don't mean little people, but little instances that with interactions you have with people throughout your day that build up and matter in using your wand.
Yes, for sure. And sometimes it's even the specificity of the word that you choose. I just want to share another story from her book. This is on the chapter of faith, and she says, hope looks forward, but faith knows it has already received and acts accordingly. She says, a man in my class whom I call the life of the party because he always tried to find a question I couldn't answer but never succeeded, asked, why is it then that a lot of women who prepare hope chests never get married? I replied, because it is a hope chest, not a faith chest. The prospective bride also violates law in telling others about it. Her friends come in and sit on the hope chest and doubt or hope she'll never succeed.
Mm.
And I think this is really, really important. She says, pray to thy father which is in secret, and thy father which sees in secret shall reward thee openly. The student should never talk of a demonstration until it has gelled or comes to pass on the external. So a hope chest should become a faith chest and be kept from the public eye and the word spoken for the divine selection of a husband under grace in a perfect way. I think this is really, really important if you just kind of ignore some of the antiquated language there. Because when we have very important dreams and goals that we are trying to manifest in our life with the power of our words and our thoughts and our actions. I do believe that while they're still in the very, very baby stage, we need to keep them hidden from public, and that includes family and friends. So, and if you think about it like a seed, when you plant a seed, where is that seed? It's in the dirt. It's hidden. It is not revealed to us until it is strong enough, until it has placed enough roots that it can reach out beyond the darkness of the dirt into the light. You know, with babies, there used to be a very strict rule that you had to keep that baby at home for 40 days.
Right.
The Greek Orthodox still adhere to that rule. And I think it's a special little treasure. So anything that is special and small and hasn't gelled, hasn't given root, I do think we need to keep that secret. And then when we're ready, we can tell it to the world. But to me, that one example that she shared proves that other people can hinder our plans with their negative subconscious thoughts.
And particularly if we buy into their negative plans. It's like my
exactly.
father's "there's just one thing" is, you know. If I had listened to him every time he'd said that, I'd have never done anything. I'd have just stayed at home on the sofa for the rest of my life.
Oh, please, the whole reason I became, well, not the whole, but a good portion of the reason why I became a teacher is because all I've ever wanted to do is write, and my mom would always say, "That's fine, but you need a day job."
Oh, I can still hear my father. He bought me a typewriter so I could learn to type in case something happened to my husband. I could be a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Those were his words.
And what we really need, Hawthorne, you know, who wrote The Scarlet Letter and Seven
right.
Gables. What is the Seven Gables story?
House of Seven Gables.
Thank you so much. My favorite writing story of all is his story, because he kept trying to write and trying to, like, run a family and trying to do everything at the same time like we all do. And one year, his wife came to him and handed him enough money for him to quit his job for 1 year. And she said, "Darling, you're a writer, and I want you to write this book that's inside of you." And he said, "Where did you get all this money?" And she said, "Well, from all the household money you budgeted for us to use, I just scrimped and saved."
Wow.
Isn't that such a lovely gift to give someone?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And she believed in him. But we don't always have a Mrs. Hawthorne.
No, we don't. We don't.
Which is why I think it's important sometimes when we have a very secret treasure that we're working on manifesting that we keep it to ourselves for a while.
And that we come from a place of positivity and joy, because many of us are like that porcupine.
Yeah.
We can be pretty prickly on the outside.
Right.
And if we can remember that there's an innocence and a joy, that's what the universe responds to.
You know, I went to the I went to New York City last weekend. Thank you for doing the show without me.
You're welcome, and I missed you, but I'm glad you.
Well, I heard
time.
It was wonderful.
It was when we finally got on the air.
So I went with my daughter to see the U.S. Open, and the forecast kept saying 90% chance of rain for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And my daughter was like, "Oh, Mom, it's going to rain. This stinks. I'm so upset." And I said, "Honey, your word is your wand. Your word is your wand." And I brought an umbrella on the airplane. But on Saturday morning, when we got up and we're getting ready to head to Queens for the Open, I said, "Honey, let's put some faith in our word as our wand. It's not going to rain on us today. Let's leave our umbrellas at home." And that's what we did. And it looked ominous, I will tell you. If you guys watched the Open, I'm sure you saw how dark the clouds were above us. It did not rain until we got on that subway and headed back to our hotel.
You know,
and even then, it only rained for like 10 minutes.
Right. You know, when I was in high school, the woman who was the leader of my church youth group was a force to be reckoned with. She was an amazing woman. And I still to this day don't think I've ever known anybody with the faith that she had. And in the community that I lived in, it was a very small community, and so we had a community Easter sunrise service. And I was supposed to participate in that as a part of the youth group the year I was, 16 or 17. And I woke up, it was pitch black dark outside, and it was raining cats and dogs. Well, I rolled over and went back to bed. And the phone rang. And she said, get up, get out of that bed. It will not rain on our sunrise service. It hasn't in low these many years. It will not rain today. Get yourself together and get down to that beach. And so I got up, I got dressed, I went to the beach, and she was right. The sun rose in a blaze of glory.
Yeah. It's amazing what that perfect faith can do.
Absolutely.
But what's hard for me, I can manifest things like a sunny day when needed, or, you know, a parking place at Target when I need to run in and run out. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But the bigger stuff is often more difficult for me to manifest unless I really am vigilant about it. And I think it's because I came from such a negative background. You know, my parents were lovely people, but were very, very negative. And I think I just want to speak to everybody listening who came from that home that was fraught with a lot of fighting and negativity and fear and doubt. I think for us, it's even harder to recognize that your word is your wand. It's taken me a long time to reclaim my power. In my 20s, I swear, I tell the story and people are like, no. But yes, one time I was at a restaurant, I was on a date with my husband, and I ordered a lasagna, and it came to me burnt, like solid black burnt. And I was too shy to return it. Like, that's how much my voice had been squelched in my upbringing. Now, today, Deb, you can attest, right, that I'll speak up when needed.
You will indeed, and I love that about you.
And I think it's really important. Another quick example, Sunday, I had the best time last Sunday. My daughter and I and her friend and her friend's mom, the four of us, we had afternoon tea at the plaza. It was so fancy. I loved every minute of it. And after drinking a pot of tea, we had to use the restroom. Well, we're at the plaza, which in my opinion is like the best hotel in the world. And there's a line. And I'm like, people, this is the plaza. There's not a line. And I reached around. There's literally seven ladies in front of me. And I'm staring into a doorway with seven stalls. And I said, there's no way that seven ladies are going to the bathroom at this exact moment. And the woman in front of me goes, you know, I was thinking the same thing, but I didn't want to say anything. So she taps on the shoulder of the woman in front of her, and she says, go check under those stalls. Well, do you know that six of them were empty?
And these people had just been standing there waiting.
Just been standing there waiting, because that's what everyone else was doing. And it took me speaking up. And again, I turned to my daughter, and I'm like, see, you have to speak up in this world. So it took me a really, really long time to find my voice. Now you can't shut me up. But there's a phrase that I keep thinking about in my head, and I've written it in my journal. I don't know what I'm going to do with this phrase, but it says, from wounded warrior to healed hero. We are all the hero of our story, each and every one of us. And it's how we view us as that hero that is going to create our future reality. So many of us carry significant wounds from our childhood. And we are warriors. We're battling. Sometimes every day is a battle. Just to battle the negative tape that plays in your head is a warrior. But I think it's really important to come to a juncture in your life where you say, that was the past. That's not me. Who those people told me I was, that's not me. And to put that warrior, that little girl, that little boy inside of you who's fighting all the time to be heard, to get out, to have a say, and just give that little boy or that little girl love and say, it's okay now. I'm the hero. I'm healed. I'm here to take over, and I'm here to be the voice for us and to forge a new path.
And you know, one of the things that has become a mantra for me is, I am enough.
Mm-hmm.
I am enough.
Yeah, that's a hard one.
Yes, it is hard.
But it's true.
Mm-hmm. Because we had those expectations of who we were supposed to be, those shoulds in our lives, that we knew we couldn't live up to, or didn't want to live up to, or wanted, you know, whatever. And to just say, I am okay, just the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And I think we've done shows on this before in the past, but to recognize also what those messages were that you were told, I think it's important to write down some of those messages. You know, you are too tall, too short, too fat, too thin, whatever the messages were, to be aware of them and maybe do a bowl burning ceremony with them. I've done that several times. It's very helpful.
It is helpful to just let them go. Mm-hmm. And to let your not only the negative or unhelpful thoughts about yourself go, but those about other people as well, like this she was saying about the man who owed her the money, because that holds power over you.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does. That's a really good point. We're at the halfway mark. I want to mention that we are sponsored by Audible, and Florence Scovel Shin, all of her books are on Audible.
Yay.
So if you go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, you can get a free 1 month trial of Audible. After that, it's just $14.95 a month, and you get a credit each month, so you can get a free book. And there's also, like, I've just gotten a ton of great books on there for like $4.95 because they're always offering little specials too, which is fun. They have The Power of the Spoken Word by Florence Scovel Shin, Your Word is Your Wand, the book I've been talking about, and The Game of Life and How to Play It. That's her most famous one, and that's the one I'd recommend getting on Audible. Your Word is Your Wand is mainly affirmations, and that's a book I have it in my hand right now, and that's a book I'd like to have in my hand because I need to see the affirmations. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But The Game of Life and How to Play It is really her quintessential work, and I recommend that. Another book I just finished on Audible that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But if anyone is having Downton Abbey,
withdrawals,
I just finished The Glitter and the Gold. It's fascinating. It's the autobiography of the American Duchess, Consuelo Vanderbilt Paulson.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a wonderful story of triumph and becoming the heroine of your own story. So that's The Glitter and the Gold. It's really good.
I have to just tell everybody, 2 weeks ago Samantha recommended this cute little book about a magic dress shop, and she loaned me the book, and I read it this weekend, and it was just precious. So.
Oh, the one that I recommended, that's on Audible too.
Yeah, that's a great little book. I thoroughly
enjoyed her. She's such a good writer.
She is a good writer. It was fun.
Yeah.
And another thing while we're on the subject of just taking a break here a minute, Samantha's website is SamanthaFay.com. My website is DebBowen.com. Samantha also has an Etsy store. Am I saying that right?
Yep, Etsy.
Okay.
It's crystal chic, but I really meant it to be crystal chic.
Okay. In any case, we would certainly appreciate you taking a look at our products and services. The reason that we're able to do this show free is because of the work that we do that we are paid for, and so we certainly really would appreciate you taking a look and seeing if anything resonates with you, and if it does, we'd love to be of service to you. So,
okay. That sounds great. All right, so back to Your Word is Your Wand. Do affirmations work? What do you think, Deb?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, they really do.
Absolutely.
There's the whole homily at church last week was on that, I think it's from Timothy, but I'm probably wrong. But the sentence that says, faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one?
Yeah, it's
and
from
I was
Romans.
Listening to that, and I was thinking, you know, what's so interesting is that applies to us with our Word is Your Wand theme. Because it's fine to say, you know, like, oh, I'm going to think positive thoughts. But then you have to actually do it. And sometimes that can be difficult to put into action. Because you want to, when you're being very cognizant of what you're saying and thinking and speaking, it's difficult. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of mental work. And it's just so easy to fall into those same old ruts. I have a friend where, you know, we're going through some interesting challenges in our personal lives, and every time we get together, it turns really negative really fast. And so she texted me yesterday and said, do you want to go to the beach with me? I promise I'll be positive. And I thought that's so funny because I've been thinking the same thing. Like every time we get together, we're like, oh, can you believe this happened and that happened? Blah, blah, blah. And I think sometimes we have those friends that it can get kind of negative with, you know?
Yes, and, you know, sometimes folks who come from that place that it's so, the negativity is so ingrained in them that they don't know how to be in the world in another way.
Right.
They can't hear us say to them, gee whiz, the sun is shining. You know, they just can't hear it. Yeah, but it's going to rain. I mean, those folks can't hear it until they're ready to hear it. I have a friend who is one of those people, and I love her dearly, and she is a wonderful, kind person, but Lord knows, you look up doom and gloom in the dictionary, and it's got her picture next to it. And for years, she's always had physical things going on and this and that and the other, and I have recommended Louise Hay's book to her, I'm probably not exaggerating, 1,000 times over the 16-so years we've been friends. She finally, and I do not know why the timing was such that it was, she heard me a few weeks ago. Well, that book has changed her life. She can see things in a very different way. And so sometimes I think there's a divine order to the transitions that folks make in shifting their consciousness of the power of their thoughts and their words.
Mm-hmm. But I do think it's important to not take responsibility. And I'm not saying that you did this at all, but I do this.
Oh, I didn't.
Like, if I'm around someone who's consistently negative, I feel like it's my job to cheer them up or to make them see things in a different way.
Uh-huh.
And then when I get disappointed, like when they disappoint me, then I blame myself. So I've had to learn to just distance myself from those people because it's really hard. I'll give you an example. Something that my father likes to do in his fun free time is to go through his college yearbook and draw an X of the people that have died.
Oh, good Lord, have mercy.
Yeah, that's a little fun time with Tom for you.
Oh, boy.
And I have sat there with him so many times and just tried to, like, cheer him up and made him focus on the wonderful man he is and the wonderful things that he's done with his life and with his time and with his money. And yet it's very comforting for him to stay in the negative. It's like an old blanket. It's how he hugs himself. And I think that there are some people that will always be like that. Now, is my father a negative person? No, he's a wonderful man. But he chooses to see the world in a negative way because that makes sense to him. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Okay. It does. You know, the very first reading I ever had with a psychic many, 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 many years ago, more than 35 years ago, one of the phrases that she said to me was that one of my tasks in this lifetime was to learn divine detachment.
Ooh, I like that phrase.
Isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that you don't care, but that you are detached from what other people do and are detached from the outcome of their circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is a lesson that I am continually learning.
Mm-hmm.
But I've gotten better about it over the years. Like you said, I had no investment in my friends reading this other than that I, you know, would hope that she would do, you know, make some changes. But she could only hear it when she could hear it. You
wow,
know?
that's a great phrase just to meditate on, divine detachment.
Divine detachment.
But, you know, last Sunday when I was in the city, we went to St. Patrick's for Mass. And the Cardinal of New York, I think his name is Timothy Dolan, gave the homily. And I talked to you about this, Deb, because it really upset me. His homily was on how we can be close to Christ and how we all need to hang on the cross like Christ. And there are three ways that we can get close to Christ. You ready for them?
Yeah, because I didn't like them, but go ahead.
Self-denial,
yes.
Self-mortification, and suffering. Ta-da! Woo! Let's party, throw the confetti. I mean, what the heck is that? So I think sometimes that our religion that we are indoctrinated in also teaches us to be negative.
Well, not all religions teach that.
No, but many, many, many do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a really difficult thing to separate yourself from.
I think that's one of the things I love about being a pagan, is that negativity is not pounded into your head.
Mm-hmm.
It,
mm-hmm.
it just isn't, you know. It is a joyful world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard when you have come to embrace a faith and get a lot of comfort from it, and then you're told, well, suffering is the best way.
Or self-mortification. Yikes.
Self-mortification. I know. I told Deb that, and she was like, what is this, Opus Day?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I went right to Dan Brown, which is what I know about self-mortification.
But, I just thought, I need to be able to walk into this institution and walk out of there an hour later feeling, you know, rejuvenated and uplifted
and
revived
uplifted.
And encouraged.
Right.
And so I just think it's important if you – I just would love for everyone to leave this podcast, this hour, really thinking about those words, your word is your wand, your word is your wand, your word is your wand, and apply it to everything that is coming at you. I mean, look at what's coming at you on the news. Look what's coming at you on the TV shows you watch, the books you read, what the preacher or pastor or priest is saying to you on Sunday. Just all the messages that are coming at you all the time. I think it is a monumental achievement to remain positive.
Well, I do too. And you know, as you're, you know, when you say wand to me, I think Harry Potter. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
I do. Okay. And there's a scene in one of the books where one of the professors, oh, I think it's Snape. I know who it is. It's Snape in his potions class who says there is not a lot of silly hocus pocus and wand waving in this course. There is more to this idea of magic than just waving a stick around in your hand. And so I think that's important to think about when you think about, you know, yes, you have this wand, you have this power, you have this tool that are your words, but you also have to use them with intention.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes the wand powerful.
Mm-hmm. The intention behind the action.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how can you do that?
By thinking before you speak, for one thing.
That's a good one, yep.
Hello. Being conscious of how, well, you can't always judge how your words are going to affect someone else, but how your words might affect you if you heard them. So how do you say them? I mean, we can say a lot of different things. We can say the same thing in a lot of different ways, and sometimes comes out as kind and caring, and another time it's biting and snippy. And I know that because, you know, you and I joke about this all the time. You're the warm, fuzzy one, and I'm the cut to the chase one. And I know that about me, and I have to be conscious of, okay, what do I need to add here to be of help or support to somebody when my tendency is perhaps to speak pretty quickly and I have to temper that. Not that I mean to be unkind, it's just, well,
sure.
Here it is.
Right, just that awareness.
That's right.
One of the things that Florence Scovel Shinn recommends is that we repeat these affirmations hundreds of times each day. And that is something that I don't do normally. You know, what I do when I have an affirmation is I write it down and I put it on my bathroom mirror. But what I've thought about doing, you know, Deb, how I told you I've been doing the morning pages again?
Yes.
From the Artist Way?
Right.
Well, I've been thinking, and I haven't done it yet because it just popped into my head yesterday, but I've been thinking about using my morning pages to write an affirmation that I'm working on over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good idea. I usually write them once or twice, depending on where I put them and how I use them. But I do have things that I say when I'm working on a particular thing. I do repeat them, probably not hundreds of times a day, but several.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I do that.
Hundreds of times a day. I mean, that's a lot.
Well, it really is. It really
is. And I wonder, though, if that's what it takes to get something, you know, marinated into our subconscious.
Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know either. But it's something interesting to think about.
You know, in the 12-step community, they have a phrase that I love, and it's fake it till you make it.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they mean by that is just keep at it, keep believing, keep acting as if.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea. And I also, of course, like the biblical injunction, pray without ceasing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, someone just asked, what are morning pages? I'm doing, thank you for that question, Lexi. I'm doing the Artist Way by Julia Cameron. It's a 12-week program to help you get in touch with your creativity. And one of the things that she recommends you do is every morning before your foot hits the floor, grab a notebook and just empty your mind. Just write 3 pages. It doesn't have to be anything important or monumental or specific. You could just write, I'm writing my morning pages for 3 pages. But it's just a way to empty your mind. It's just a wonderful book. It's called The Artist Way by Julia Cameron, and it has...
I'll write it in the chat room for you. It's one of my favorites.
I think Jerome already has it in there.
Oh, okay.
And yes,
thank you,
3
Jerome.
Pages, 3 handwritten pages that cannot be typed.
Yes, yeah, there's a different thing that happens energetically between your mind and your hand when you're writing as opposed to as to typing. It's a very
mm-hmm.
it's a very different thing. You know, as much as I type, I write on the computer, I'm work that I'm working on, but my journals are handwritten.
And I think it's David Sedaris who does them at night.
I do better with them at night, too.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, like, oh, my goodness, you know, nighttime is so much better for me. Mornings, I'm, you know, packing lunches and getting kids up. But I've been doing it, and it's been very, very helpful. And she has another great suggestion where you make a date with yourself every week, and 1 hour a week you do something that enriches your soul.
And I do
that. It has
that.
To be something that enriches your soul, not like just shopping or getting your nails done or, you know, working out or something. And anyway, it's a good book.
Yeah, I found that writing in the morning does not work so much for me, but I have been consistent with it for periods of time at night, and that has worked out all right for me. And yes, I do think that giving yourself permission to do something for your soul is really, really important. I may not be speaking for other folks, but sometimes I have to give myself that permission. For example, where we live early last week, we had a day that was absolutely crystal clear, beautiful fall weather. No humidity. It came out of nowhere. It was a glorious day. And I got up, and I'm making coffee, and I'm doing my normal morning routine, and I'm meditating, I'm doing whatever. And I thought, you know, gosh, I'd love to go walk on the beach today. And I thought, go walk on the beach. It's okay. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. No, I need to do so. And I thought, it will be there when you get home. You can do that when it's raining. Go. And I had to talk myself into it. And, of course, after I did, it was wonderful, you know.
Oh, please. I'm the queen of pathetic when it comes to that. I really am. Last weekend, I'm embarrassed to admit this on a show, but... last weekend was the first time I left my children in 13 years.
I know. I was so proud.
Never,
of you. You were so proud.
You know, I had one with me. My 13-year-old was with me, but the other two I left at home with my husband. And I'm just that weird kind of mom who I have such a hard time leaving them. I think it's also because my husband is brain injured and has short-term memory, so I have to keep texting, did you feed them? but I did it. And they had a great weekend, and everyone survived, and it was a really good lesson to me that, you know, it's okay. It's okay. You can have fun. It's all right. And I think it's exciting that we're always learning these wonderful things about ourselves and about, you know, one thing that you say all the time, Deb, that really, really resonates with me on a daily basis is you always have choices. In
right.
every situation, you always have choices. That's something you say to our clients all the time. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to remember that.
It's true. And sometimes we don't feel like we do.
Mm-hmm.
But even to not make a choice is to make a choice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and in every situation we have a choice. So,
right.
you know, if you're in a situation where your work life is super negative and you're in a highly specialized job and you just can't see a way out other than dealing with that negative job, just remember that you always have choices. You have to just sometimes take a broader perspective, you know, kind of zoom out rather than zoom in to see those choices. And one of those choices, I think, is that we can change the way we speak and think about this situation.
Absolutely.
Not to always give it a negative twist and turn.
Your thoughts have power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, you know, it's so funny, as we are talking about this in 2015, and we're talking about a book that was written in 1920 what?
Eight.
And we're also talking about Norman Vincent Peale's book that was written, I think, in the 50s. I'm not sure about that, but I think that's right. And Louise Hay's book is old. I mean, this idea is not new news. But we have to keep relearning this lesson, I think, individually and culturally. I think we have to keep learning that.
Well, and Gypsy Girl in the chat room just wrote, it's hard to remember. And it really
is. It sure is. Absolutely. You're right. I agree. It is. And we have to keep, I can't speak for we, but I have to keep relearning that I have choices. I remember.
Well, and also because there's a tricky balance. You know, like, I have a friend. If I am ever negative with her, she shuts me out. Like, she can't handle it, so she'll just kind of be like, okay, I gotta go now.
Bye-bye.
And you know me, Deb. Like, I'm not negative unless there's something seriously to be negative about, right? Like, you know, like, if there's, like, a really big issue, like, I have breast cancer. I'm sorry, I can't be happy about that right now. You know, but other than that, I'm like a super positive person. But this friend, if I ever call her because I'm in a bad mood or I'm sad about something or I'm worried about something, she'll be like, oh, that stings. I'm sorry. I got to go.
And sometimes we need those people to be there who will hear us when we don't feel like we do have choices.
Exactly. You know? That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah, there's got to be a balance. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, Gypsy Girl said it's really hard to remember to do this, and I think that's true. And I also think it's true that sometimes life just really sucks at different points in your journey, and that's okay, too. You know, you don't have to be, you know, fake it till you make it. You don't have to fake it all the time. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be angry. You've got to feel your feelings in order to release them. But then you have to move out of that feeling.
Right, you got to release them and you got to move on. You do. You got to. That's where the choice comes in.
Exactly, and that's where a lot of people, I think, get stuck.
Right, exactly. And I think sometimes, and I think this is a big one, is that sometimes our thoughts about not having choices have to do with wanting other people to change, and we can't change other people. There's not a thing in this world we can do to change somebody else. They have to make those choices. Oh, my life will be better if my husband did so-and-so. Well, you know, and I want him to change. Well, he's not gonna. He's not gonna pick up those socks. It's not gonna happen.
Well, and you know what else happens with me personally when I'm trying to make big changes in my life? I want things just to happen to me.
Well, you want life to happen to you.
Right. I don't want to have to go out and happen to life. I want life just to happen to me. When I get in those feelings where I'm feeling very fearful about making a change, I'll always think, oh, if only this could happen to me, then I wouldn't have to make that scary leap.
Well, you know, I bet a lot of us have had that, oh, if I won the lottery and I had $1 million, what would I do with it thing, right?
Right.
Well, I said that to somebody one time, and my friend said, well, Deb, have you ever bought a lottery ticket? Well, no. The lottery isn't going to happen to me. I've never bought a lottery ticket, you know? I don't even know how to buy a lottery ticket. So, you know, the lottery isn't going to happen to me, and life isn't going to happen to me. I have to happen to life.
Yeah. And I think that's sometimes a difficult message because it's scary. And one thing I want to also point out, one thing that I've learned in doing readings for people and in tuning into my own life path is that failure is sometimes a part of your path. And it's important to accept that and to not look at that as a setback.
Yes.
There's a blog, a podcast that I listen to a lot. It's Soul Connections with Robert Otto. He's the astrologer for Hay House. He has a really, really good podcast on the law of attraction where he kind of debunks a lot of it. And it's like a 2-hour podcast, but I recommend you guys listen to it. It's on Soul Connections. If you Google that on iTunes, you should find it. and look at the one where he talks about the law of attraction, because what he says in there is that the law of attraction teaches us that if you think good thoughts, good things will happen to you. And he says that's not always true, because sometimes negative things are supposed to happen to us in order to grow our soul. And what happened to me on my path is I worked so hard, I mean really so hard, to be positive and to grow my soul and to grow my faith and to grow in my spirituality. And then it was like waves, you know, standing in the ocean, waves after wave after wave, just knocking me down and making me feel alone and isolated and frankly like a blubbering idiot for trying to think positive in the face of such negativity. And I had to realize that sometimes negative things are supposed to happen to you, and it is not my position to judge those negative things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my position to accept that those things happen. Where I can have choice is in how I react to those negative things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's really, really important. So if negative things happen to you, I don't think you should judge yourself or judge the world or judge your God. Because I'll tell you, there have been many, many, many nights where I've been like, God, I'm done with you. You know, like, you're not there for me. You're not answering my prayers. Goodbye. And then there have been other months where I'm like, I'm so sorry I said that. Come back. So I think it's really important when you're going through those dark nights of the soul to sometimes recognize that maybe your higher self planned these dark nights of the soul for a reason. Because
you,
it isn't.
You planned them before you came into this lifetime.
Right. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to recognize that that might be. Now, I'm not saying to take responsibility or judgment or, you know, to feel bad that you picked these negative things. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that.
No, because, you know, sometimes it is from those dark nights of the soul, from the depths of our despair, that some of the greatest and most wonderful gifts come to us.
Mm-hmm.
As we learn about ourselves and we learn about our place in the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that takes a while. We have to have some distance from those events sometimes.
Yeah, because there's a line in the movie, The Secret. I haven't read the book. I've just seen the movie several times. And there's a line in there where one of the guys says, I hate to be a little bit in your face, but I have to tell you that everything in your life right now, even the negative stuff, you created.
Right.
But that line, I have a really hard time with, because I don't think it's always true. What if you're married to someone who's super negative, and they're creating a lot of negativity? Can you own that? Should you own that?
But but it's how you choose to deal with it that's your responsibility.
Exactly. That's where I want to put the highlight. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes negative stuff is going to happen to you. It doesn't mean necessarily that you created it. And so you don't have to own every negative thing in your life. But what you do have to own is how you respond to every negative thing in your life.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's where your word is your wand comes into play.
Right. Yes, you know, and I guess I just hear the notion that wand is a focus point as well. I want to bring that up before we run out of time here, that it is about focusing your intent. It is about focusing your energy. It's focusing your awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's what a wand does. Hmm?
Awareness on what?
On what we say to ourselves, what we think, what we believe, what we say, and then what we do.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if any of you are out there listening to this and you have kids, what has amazed me in raising three very different children is that we kind of come into this life with our own personalities. And you know, I have one little girl who always kind of tends to see the glass half empty, you know. And I have another little girl who always sees the glass half full. And both sometimes can be a detriment. You know what I mean? You need a little bit of balance. And I think we as parents have such a wonderful potential and power, really, to teach our children that their word is their wand.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a gift that we can give them.
Right. It is. Samantha, we are out of time. I hope that this show has been helpful to everybody. We've had a good time. We thank you so much for your contributions in the chat room, and we really hope that those of you who will be listening later in the week find that this is helpful and uplifting to you.
We just love you all. Thank you so much for listening.
Absolutely. Thank you all, and of course, we will be with you next week. And in the meantime, everyone, be the light.
Be the light.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.